lost in the fire. Even Morosko had gone, not to return until the snow fell. Now her companion in the darkness was a creature whose nature was madness given flesh. But sometimes he sounded ordinary, even sensible. And every time that happened, she had to remind herself to keep up her defenses. Now the bear was pacing the golden mare, beast-shaped. "Men will not keep their word," he said. "I do not recall asking for your opinion," she snapped. "Better for Cherti to fight them before they destroy us," the bear went on. She could hear the echo of men screaming in his low voice. "Or better yet, let the Russians and the Tatars destroy each other." "Dmitri and Sergei will keep their word," she said. "Have you ever thought what meddling in their war will cost you?" he said. "What price Dmitri's promise and his admiration? I saw the look in your eyes when Dmitri called you princess." "Is the prize not worth the risk?" "That depends," said the bear, as they ran through midnight. "I am not sure you know what you're risking." She didn't answer. She didn't trust his seeming sense any more than she trusted his wickedness. The lake was dark in the moonlight, rippling black. White dazzles on the crests of the waves. No long, terrifying journey on foot for her this time. Vasya found the lake swiftly, as though her blood remembered it. She and Pozhar and the bear burst out of the trees and found themselves beside the great stretch of moonlit water. Vasya's breath caught in her throat, and she slid down the mare's shoulder. The horses were grazing where she'd last seen them, near the shore. This time, they didn't run from her but stood, ghostly in the cold mist of early autumn night, raised their flawless heads and looked. Pozhar pricked her ears and called softly to her kin. The witch's empty house stood black and still on its tall posts, on the other side of the field. Still a grim ruin, the Domovaya asleep once more, perhaps, waiting in her oven. Vasya let herself briefly imagine the house warm with firelight, with laughter, her family close, the horses, a great herd, grazing in the starlight outside. One day. But that night, she was there neither for the house nor for the horses. "Get Grib," she called. The little chert, glowing green in the dark, was waiting for her in the shadow of the great oak. He gave a small cry, ran toward her, then halted halfway. Either he was trying to look dignified, or the bear made him nervous, Vasya could not tell. "Thank you, my friend," Vasya said to him and bowed, "for asking Pozhar to come to me. You both saved my life." Getgrib looked proud.
"I think she likes me," he confided. "That is why she went. She likes me because we both glow at night."
Pozhar snorted and shook her mane. Getgrib added,
"Why did you come back? Are you going to stay now? Why is the eater with you?"
The mushroom spirit looked suddenly fierce.
"He is not to kick over any of my mushrooms."
"That depends," said the bear pointedly. "If my brave mistress does not give me something better to do than run to and fro in the dark, I will happily kick over all your mushrooms."
Getgrib bristled. "He is not going to touch anything of yours," said Vasya to Getgrib, glaring at the bear. "He is traveling with me now. We came back for you because I need your help."
"I knew you couldn't do without me," cried Getgrib triumphantly. "Even if now you have allies that are bigger."
He gave the bear a very hard look.
"This is going to be a terrible war," the bear interjected. "What damage do you expect to do with a mushroom?"
"You'll see," said Vasya, and offered her hand to the little mushroom spirit. Mamai's army was strung out along the Don. The vanguard was already settled at Kulikova, the reserves encamped in stages for a great distance to the south, ready to march up at first light. Moving softly through midnight, Vasya and the mare and the two Cherti capped a small rise, and peered through the trees at the host below. Yetgreave's eyes grew huge, seeing the scale of the sleeping enemy. His green glowing limbs quivered. There were fires along the bank as far as the eye could see. "There are so many," he whispered. Vasya, surveying the immense stretch of men and horses, said, "We'd best get to work then, but first..." Pojar would not take saddle or saddlebag. Vasya had to carry a pouch slung around her instead, annoying when riding fast. From it, she withdrew bread and strips of hard-smoked meat, Dimitri's parting gift. She gnawed a bit herself, and without thinking, tossed some to her two allies. Utter silence. She looked up to find Yetgreep holding his bit of bread, looking pleased. But the bear was staring at her, holding the meat in his hand, not eating.
"An offering?" he said, almost growling. "You have my service. Do you want still more of me?"
"Not a present," said Vasya coldly. "It's just food." She gave him a scowl and resumed chewing.
"Why?" he asked.
She had no answer. She hated his wantonness, his cruelty, his laughter, and hated it even more because something of her own nature called out in answer. Perhaps that was why. She could not hate him, for to do so would be to risk hating herself.
"You have not betrayed me yet," said Vasya at last.
"As you say," said the bear. But he still sounded puzzled. Holding her gaze, he ate.
Then he shook himself and smiled down chillingly at the sleeping encampment, licking his fingers. Vasya reluctantly rose and went to join him.
"I don't know about mold, little mushroom," said the bear to Yetgreave, "but fear leaps between men like sickness. Their numbers won't help with that. Come, let us begin."
Yetgreave gave the bear a frightened look. He had put his bread away. Now he said tremulously to Vasya, "What do you want me to do?" She brushed the crumbs from her shirt. A little food had restored her, but now a fearful night's work loomed.
"If you can, blight their bread," said Vasya, and turned away from the bear's grin. "I want them hungry."
Down they went into the sleeping encampment, foot by foot. Vasya had wrapped rags around the faint shimmer of gold on her arms. Her knife or the bear's claws tore the boxes and bags of the army's food, and where Yetgreave plunged his hands, the flour and meat began to soften and stink. When Yetgreave seemed to have the idea, she left him and the bear to creep unseen among the tents of Mamai, spreading terror and rot in their wake. For her part, she slipped down to the river to call the Vodyanoi of the dawn. "The Cherti have made an alliance with the Grand Prince of Moscow," she told him low. When she had related all her tale, she then persuaded him to raise the river so that the Tatars would not sleep dry. 3 nights later, the Tatar army was in disarray along its length, and Vasya hated herself anyway. "You can't kill any of them asleep," she told the bear when he sniffed, grinning, at a man who thrashed in the grip of a nightmare. "Even if they can't see us, it's not..." She trailed off with no words for her revulsion. Medved surprised her by shrugging and stepping back.
"Of course not," he said. "That is not the way. An assassin in the dark can be fought, can be found and killed. Fear is more potent still, and people fear what they can't see and don't understand. I will show you."
God help her, he had. Like some foul apprenticeship, she walked with the bear through the Tatar camp, and together they spread terror in their wake. She set fires in wagons and tents, made men scream at half-glimpsed shadows. She terrified their horses, though it hurt her to see them wild-eyed and running. The girl and the two Cherti traveled from one end of the spread-out forest to the other. They gave Mamai and his army no rest. Horses broke their pickets and fled. When the Tatars lit fires, the flames flared up without warning and sent sparks into unsuspecting faces. The soldiers whispered that they were haunted by a beast, by monsters that glowed, by a ghost girl with eyes too large in the sharp planes of her face. "Men make themselves afraid," the bear told her, smiling. "Imagining is worse than anything they actually see. All it takes is whispers in the dark. Come with me now, Vasilisa Petrovna." By the third night, he was swollen with pleasure like a tick. Vasya was worn to a thread, sick for the dawn. "Enough," she told them both, after yet another stretch roaming the camp, every sense on alert, half frightened, half sharing the bear's mad glee at the mischief. "Enough. I am going to find a place to sleep, and then we'll go back to my brother in the light." She could bear no more darkness. Dietgrieb looked relieved. The bear, merely satiated. The air was chilly and blank with cold mist. She found a sheltered hollow in the thickest part of the wood, well away from the main body of troops. Even wrapped in her cloak, on a bed of pine boughs, she shivered. She dared not light a fire. The bear was untroubled by the weather. As a beast, he terrorized the Tatar camp, but now, at rest, he looked like a man. He lay contentedly in the bracken, looking up into the night with his arms behind his head. Dietgrieb was hiding under a rock, his green glow faint. Spoiling the Tatar's food had wearied and discouraged him. "They drink the milk of their horses," he'd said. "I can't spoil that. They won't be too hungry." Vasya had no answer for Dietgrieb. She was feeling sick herself. The panic of men and beasts seemed to echo in her bones, but still she didn't know if all their efforts would be enough to turn the tide of the coming battle. "You are quite disgusting," she told the bear, seeing the flash of his teeth when he smiled. He didn't even lift his head. "Why? Because I've been enjoying myself?" The glimmering gold on Vasya's wrists reminded her, uneasily, of the covenant between them. She didn't speak. He rolled onto his elbow to look at her, a smile playing about his twisted mouth. "Or because you have." "Deny it? Why? It would only give him power." "Yes," she said. "I liked frightening them. They invaded my country, and Chelubey tortured my brother. But I am sick at myself, too, and ashamed, and very tired." The bear looked faintly disappointed. "You ought to flog yourself a bit more over it," he said, and rolled onto his back once more. That way lay madness, hiding from the worst parts of her own nature until, out of sight, they became monstrous growths to devour the rest of her. She knew that, and the bear knew it too. "That was what Father Constantine did. Look where it got him," she said. The bear said nothing. The Tatar army was out of sight, but still close enough to smell. Even bone-tired, irritable with damp, she was oppressed by the sheer weight of their numbers. She had promised Oleg magic, but she didn't know if there was enough magic in the world to give Dmitri his victory. "Do you know what you are going to say to my brother when the snow falls?" asked the bear, still looking at the sky. "What?" she said, jolted by the question. "His power will be waxing now, as mine is waning. You can bind me with threats and promises, but soon," the bear sniffed the air, "very soon, you're going to have to face the Winter King. Do you mean to threaten him?" The bear smiled slowly. "I'd like to see you try. Oh, he will be so angry. I enjoy this world, the ugliness and the beauty, and meddling in the doings of men. Karachun does not." The bear winked at her. "For your sake, he spent his strength, went into Moscow, fought me in summer against his nature. But then you turned around and freed me. He will be very angry."
What I say to him is not your concern, said Vasya coldly.
It most certainly is, said Medved. But I can wait. I like surprises.
She'd had no murmur of the Winter King since he left her in Moscow. Did Morozko know she'd set his brother free? Would he understand why? Did she?
I am going to sleep, she said to the bear. You are not to betray me or draw attention to us or use someone else to draw attention to us or awaken me or touch me or...
The bear laughed and lifted a hand.
Enough, girl. You've already exhausted my imagination. Go to sleep.
She gave him one more narrow-eyed look, and then she turned over. The bear, reasonable, laughing, was much more dangerous than the beast in the clearing. She was awakened, a little before daybreak, by a scream. Heart hammering, she lurched to her feet. The bear was peering through the trees, looking quite untroubled.
I was wondering when they were going to notice, he said without looking round.
Notice what?
That village there. I imagine most of the villagers took what they could and fled, with the army camped so close. But someone didn't. And your Tatars are tired of mare's milk.
Vasya, feeling sick, crossed to his vantage point. It was only a tiny village, hidden in a fold of the land, sheltered by great trees. It probably would have gone unnoticed had the Tatars not been roaming for food to fill their bellies. Even she hadn't seen it. She wondered if the bear had, but now it was a fire in a dozen places. Another scream, smaller and thinner now.
Pujar, said Vasya.
The mare sidled up to her, huffing unhappily. For once, she made no objection when Vasya vaulted to her back.
Far be it from me, said the bear, to curb your so charming impulses, but I doubt very much you'll like what you see, he added. And you could be killed.
Vasya said, if I can put folk to such risk, the least I can do is...
The Tatars put them at risk.
But Vasya was already gone. By the time she got to the tiny hamlet, the houses had burned almost to the ground. If there had been animals, there weren't any now. Silence, emptiness, unwilling hope rose in her. Perhaps all the villagers had run at the first sign of the Tatars. Perhaps it was only a pig, dying, that had made a sound like a scream. That was when she heard the small, choking moan, not quite a cry. Bojar's ear swiveled. At the same time, Vasya saw a slender dark shape huddled near a burning house. Vasya slid down Pojar's shoulder, caught the woman, and dragged her back from the flames. Her hand came away sticky with blood. The woman made a fainter sound of pain, but did not speak. The light of the burning houses illuminated her, pitilessly. She'd had her throat cut, but not well enough to kill her at once. She'd also been pregnant, laboring perhaps. That was why she'd not fled when her people did. If anyone had stayed with her, Vasya couldn't see. There was only the woman, scrapes on her hands, where she had pushed off men, and blood, so much blood on her skirts. Vasya laid a hand on her belly, but it didn't stir, and there was a great seeping wound there too. The woman was gasping for air, her lips turning blue. Her dim eyes sought Vasya's face. Vasya took her bloody hand in hers.
My child, the woman whispered. You'll see her soon, said Vasya steadily. Where is she? Said the woman. I can't hear her cry. There were men. Oh!
A choking gasp.
Did they hurt her?
No, said Vasya. She is safe. And you will see her. Come, we will pray to God.
Ochi nash.
The Lord's Prayer was soft and familiar, comforting. The woman joined in as she could, even as her stare grew fixed and empty. Vasya didn't know she'd begun to cry until a tear fell onto their joined hands.
She lifted her head to see the death god standing there, his white horse at his side. Their eyes met, but his face was without expression. Vasya shut the woman's eyes, laid her on the earth, and stepped back. He did not speak. Her body lay still on the earth, but nonetheless, the deaf god seemed to gather the woman in his arms, gently, and put her on his horse. Vasya made the sign of the cross. We can share this world. He turned his eyes again to Vasya's face. Was there a flicker of feeling there? Anger? A question? No. Only the deaf god's ancient indifference. He swung to the white mare's back and rode away, silent as he'd come. Vasya was soaked with a woman's blood and burning with shame that she'd been sleeping in the woods thinking herself clever, while others bore the burden of the Tatar's anger.
Well, said the bear, coming up beside her, you've put an end to my brother's indifference, that's certain. Poor fool. Is he doomed to regret every dead girl he carries away over his saddle bow?
The bear looked pleased at the prospect.
I congratulate you. I've been trying to make him feel things for years, rage mostly, but he's as cold as his season.
Vasya barely heard him.
It will be delightful to see what happens when the snow comes, the bear added.
She only turned her head slowly. There is no priest, she said low. I could do nothing for her.
Why would you? Asked the bear, impatient. Her own people will come out of hiding soon enough, and they will pray and weep and do all that's needful. Besides, she's dead. She won't care.
If I hadn't... The bear gave her a look of outright scorn.
Hadn't what? You are playing for all of Rus, seen and unseen. Not one peasant girl's life.
She pressed her lips together. You might have woken me, she said. I could have saved her.
Could you? The bear asked calmly. Perhaps. But I enjoyed the screaming, and you told me not to wake you.
She turned away from him and vomited. When she had done, she rose and got water from the stream. She washed the blood from the dead woman's body and composed her limbs. Then Vasya went back to the stream and scrubbed herself by the light of the dying fires, heedless of the chill. She scraped at her skin with handfuls of sand until she was shuddering with cold. Then she cleaned the blood from her clothes and put them wet on her body. When she had done, she turned around to find the bear and Yetgrib both watching her. Neither said a word. Yetgrib looked solemn. The bear's face was free for once of mockery. He looked puzzled instead. Vasya shook the water from her hair and addressed Yetgrib first.
Do you mean to come to the battle, my friend?
Yetgrib shook his head slowly.
I am only a mushroom, he whispered. I do not like the fear and the fire, and I am tired of these fighting men. They have no care for growing things.
I have liked it, said Vasya, determined not to spare herself. The fear and the fire of these last nights, it made me feel free and strong to make others afraid. Others paid the price for my pleasure.
Yetgrib, I will see you at the lake, God willing. Yetgrib nodded and vanished between the trees. The sun was just rising. Vasya took a deep breath. Let us go to Dmitri Ivanovich and make an end.
The first sensible thing you've said since you woke up, said the bear.
Chapter 32. Kulikova. The Russians rode down to Kulikova at the close of the third day and made camp. Even Dmitri was silent, except to give the necessary orders, settling the men for the night, deploying his forces for the dawn. He'd had reports, of course, of the numbers, but reports were different than seeing something with his own eyes. Mamai had finished bringing up his main host. They spread out in a single line across the field, as far as the eye could reach.
The men are afraid, said Sasha to Dmitri and Vladimir, as they rode down to the mouth of the Dnepryadva, a tributary of the Don, to reconnoiter the ground.
Praying will not make them less so. We may tell them all the day that God is on our side, but the men can see the numbers across the field. Dmitri Ivanovich, they have more than twice our force, and more are coming up.
I can see the numbers across the field, put in Vladimir. I am not happy myself.
Dmitri's and Vladimir's attendants were riding out of earshot, but even they looked at the opposing host and whispered, sallow-faced.
There is nothing to do now, said Dmitri, besides praying, feeding the men well this night, and getting them into battle tomorrow before they have time to think too much.
There is one other thing we could do, said Sasha.
Both his cousins turned to look at him.
What? Said Vladimir.
He'd been suspicious of Sasha ever since their reunion, wary of his unholy allies and of the existence of Vasya, his sister-in-law, with her strange powers.
Challenge them to single combat, said Sasha.
A silence fell among the three of them. Single combat was a kind of augury. It wouldn't halt the battle, but the winner would have God's favor, and everyone in both armies would know it.
It would put heart in the men, said Sasha. It would make all the difference.
If our champion won, said Vladimir.
If our champion won, acknowledged Sasha, but his eyes were on Dmitri.
Dmitri did not speak. His eyes were on the mud and water of the open field and beyond, to where the Tatars waited, their horses numberless as autumn leaves in the westering light. Beyond them, the Don River lay like a bar of silver. For 3 days it had rained, heavy and cold. Now the sky had darkened and seemed to promise early snow. Slowly Dmitri said,
Do you think they'd agree to such a thing?
Yes, said Sasha, I do. Are they to seem afraid to send a champion out?
If I ask and they agree, then whom should I name to fight for us? Said Dmitri.
But he spoke in the tone of a man who knows the answer.
Me, said Sasha.
Dmitri said,
I have 100 men who could do it. Why you?
I am the best fighter, said Sasha.
He wasn't boasting, but stating a fact.
I am a monk, a servant of God. I am your best chance.
Dmitri said, I need you at my side, Sasha, not
cousin. Said Sasha fiercely. I broke my father's heart, leaving home as a boy. I have not been true to my vows, for I could never stay quiet at the monastery. But never have I betrayed the soil that bore me. I have kept faith with it and defended it. I will defend it now before both our hosts.
Vladimir said, He is right. It might make all the difference.
Frightened men are beaten men. You know it as well as I.
Grudgingly, he added,
And he fights well.
Dmitri still looked unwilling, but he looked again at the host opposing them, half obscured now by the dying light.
I will not deny you, said Dmitri. You are the best of us. The men know it.
He paused again.
Tomorrow morning, then, he said heavily, if the Tatars are willing, I will send a messenger. But you are not to get yourself killed, Sasha.
Never, said Sasha and smiled.
My sisters would be angry.
It was almost full dark when Sasha left the princess for the night. Dmitri's messenger had not yet returned, but he needed to sleep against whatever the day brought. He had no gear, just a fire of his own, a patch of dry earth, and his horse hobbled near. When he got closer, he saw the golden mare standing next to his own Tuman. Vasya had built up his fire and seated herself beside it. She looked weary and sad. The fey, mad creature of the night at Kolomna was gone.
Vasya, he said, where have you been?
Harrying an army in the company of the most ill-natured of devils, said Vasya. Learning yet again the limits of what I can do.
Her voice cracked.
I think, said Sasha gently,
that you've done too much." She rubbed her face, still slumped on the log between the horse's feet. "I don't know if it was enough. I even tried to creep in and kill the general, but he is well guarded now. Learned his lesson after I got Vladimir away. I didn't want to die trying. I set fire to his tent, though." Sasha said firmly, "It was enough. You gave us a chance when there was none before. It was enough." "I tried setting men afire," she said, with choked confession, the words spilling out. "I tried while the bear laughed, but I couldn't. He said that it is hardest to do magic on creatures that have a mind of their own, and I didn't know enough. Vasya. But I set other things afire, bowstrings and wagons. I laughed to see them burn, and they killed a woman in labor, because their supply was spoiled and they were angry and hungry." Sasha said, "God rest her spirit then. But Vasya, stop. We have a chance. Your courage gave it to us, and your blood. It is enough. Do not lament what you cannot change." Vasya said nothing, but when her distracted eyes fell on his fire, the flames leaped high, even though there was precious little wood in it to burn, and her fists clenched so that her nails bit into her palms. "Vasya," said Sasha sharply, "enough of that. When did you last eat?" She thought. Yesterday morning," she said. "I could not bear to wait and go back into midnight, so Porshar and I came here as the crow flies, staying out of sight of Mamai's army." "Very well," said Sasha firmly. "I am going to make soup. Yes, here. I have my own supply, and I am capable. We do not have serving women in the Lavra. You are going to eat and then sleep. Everything else can wait." It was a measure of her weariness that she didn't argue. They didn't speak much while the water boiled, and when he dished out her food, she said almost inaudibly, "Thank you," and swallowed it down. Three bowls with flatbread of flour paste on a hot rock, and a little color had come back into her face. He handed her his cloak. "Go to sleep," he said. "What about you?" "Tonight I mean to pray." He thought of telling her then about what the next day might hold, but he didn't. She looked so worn, so tired. The last thing she needed was a night of broken sleep, afraid for him. And it was possible the Tatars would refuse the challenge. "Stay near, at least," she said. "Of course I'll stay." She nodded once, eyelids already heavy. Sasha, studying her, surprised himself by saying, "You look just like our mother." Her eyes opened at that. Sudden pleasure drove away the shadows in her face. He said, smiling, "Our mother always put bread in the oven at night for the domovoy." "I did the same," said Vasya, "when I lived at Lesnaya Zemlya. Father teased her for it. He was always content in those days. They loved each other very much." Vasya was sitting up now. "Dunya did not speak much of her, not when I was old enough to remember. I think Anna Ivanovna forbade it, for our father did not love her, and he had loved our mother." "They were a joy to each other," said Sasha. "Even as a boy, I could see it." It was hard to speak of that time. He had ridden away the year after his mother died. Would he have stayed if she had lived? He didn't know. Ever since he came to the Lavra, he had tried to forget the boy he had been, Alexander Petrovich, with his faith and his strength, his enthusiasms and foolish pride, the boy who had worshipped his mother. But now he found himself remembering. He found himself talking. To his sister, he spoke of midwinter feasts and childhood mishaps, of his first sword, his first horse, his mother's voice raised laughing in the forest ahead of him. He spoke of her hands, her songs, her offerings. Then he spoke of the Lavra in winter, the deep calm of the monastery, the bell ringing out over the dreaming forest, the slow round of prayers that marked the cold days, the steady faith of his master, whom men came to see from many days' travel in all directions. He spoke of the days on horseback and the nights around his fire. He spoke of Sarai and Moscow and places in between. He spoke of Russia, not of Muscovy or Tver or Vladimir, the principalities of the sons of Kiev, but of Russia itself, of its skies and its soil, its people and its pride. She listened in rapt stillness, eyes vast and filled like cups with shadow. "That is what we are fighting for," said Sasha. "Not for Moscow or even Dmitri, not for the sake of any of her squabbling princes, but for the land that bore us, man and devil alike." Chapter 33. On the Cusp of Winter. Vasya awakened to the touch of early snow on her face. Sasha had fallen asleep at last, the murmur of his prayers stilled in the deep hush of night. The air had a crisp bite. The earth was just rimed with frost. The men's voices all around had sunk to silence. All who could sleep were sleeping, to gather strength against the dawn. A chill wind raced through the Russian camp, fluttering their banners and sending snow in eddies over the earth. Vasya took a deep breath and got to her feet, pausing to lay the cloak over her sleeping brother. She saw the bear. He was in the form of a man, standing perfectly still, beyond the red coals of their fire. He was watching the scanty flakes drift down from the sky. "It is early for snow," said Vasya. For the first time, there was a hint of fear beneath the exalted malice in the bear's face. "It is my brother's power waxing," he said. "One more test, sea maiden, and it might be the hardest." Vasya straightened her back. The Winter King rode out of the dark, as though the cold wind had blown him to her, his mare's hooves soundless against the muddy, white-glazed earth. The two armies, even her sleeping brother, might not have existed. There was only herself, the King of Chaos and the King of Winter, wrapped in a whirl of new snow. Morozko was not the thin, almost formless creature of high summer, nor was he the magnificent velvet-clad lord of midwinter. He was dressed all in white, the first bitter breath of the new season. He halted and slid from the back of his horse. Her throat was dry. "Winter King," she said. He surveyed her, up and down. He did not look at the bear, but his not looking had a force all its own. "I knew you meant to fight, Vasilisa Petrovna," he said after a moment. "I didn't know the manner you would choose." Only then did his glance find his brother. A spark of old hatred leaped between them. "You were always insufferable, Karachun," said the bear. "What did you think would happen when you left her to fight a war she had no notion how to win?" "I thought you had learned some wisdom," said Morozko, turning back to Vasya. "You have seen what he is capable of." "You knew what he was capable of better than I," said Vasya. "Yet you also freed the bear because you were desperate. I was desperate too. Just as he swore you an oath then, he has sworn one to me now." She raised her hands. The two ropes glowed at her wrists, power quiescent in the oily gold. "Has he?" said Morozko, with a cold glance at them. "And after he swore, what then? Have you been roving about, terrorizing men in his company? Have you gotten a taste for cruelty?" "Do you not know me?" she said. "I have loved danger since I was a child, but I have never loved cruelty." Morozko's eyes searched her face, searched and searched until she looked away, getting angry. He snapped, "Look at me!" She snapped back,
What are you looking for?
Madness, he said. Malice. Do you think all dangers posed by the bear are obvious? He will work on your mind until one day you laugh at bloodshed and suffering.
I am not laughing yet, she said. But his eyes went again to the gold on her wrists. Was she supposed to feel ashamed?
I have taken power where I could find it, but I have not turned to evil.
Have you not? He is clever. You will fall unknowing.
I haven't had time to fall, knowing or unknowing.
She was really angry now.
I have been running through the dark, trying to save all who have need of me. I have done good, and I have done evil, but I am neither. I am only myself. You will not make me ashamed, Morosko.
Truly, said the bear to her, I hate to agree with him, but you should probably feel guiltier over it. Berate yourself a bit.
She ignored him. Nearer she stepped to the Winter King until she could read his face, even in the dark. And there was feeling there for her to read. Anger, hunger, fear, even grief, his indifference torn to shreds. Her anger left her. She took his hand. He let her have it, his fingers cool and light in hers. She said softly, I called every power of this land to war, Winter King. It had to be done. We cannot fight amongst ourselves.
He killed your father, said Morosko. She swallowed.
I know. And now he is bound to help save my people. She lifted her free hand, touched his cheek. She was close enough now to see him breathe. She framed his face with her fingers, drew his eyes back to her. The snow was falling faster from the sky. Will you fight with us tomorrow? She asked.
I will be there for the dead, he said.
His glance strayed away from her to the camp at large. She wondered how many would see the next day's dusk.
You need not be there at all. It is not too late. You've done what you can. You've kept your word. You and your brother can.
It is too late, she said. Sasha would never leave Dmitri now. And I too am pledged.
Pledged to your pride, retorted Morosko. You want the obedience of Cherti and the admiration of princes, so you are taking this mad risk alongside Dmitri. But you have never seen a battle.
No, I haven't, she said, her voice gone as cold as his. She had dropped her hands, but she did not step back. Though, yes, I want Dmitri's admiration. I want a victory. I even want power over princes and Cherti. I am allowed to want things, Winter King.
They were near enough to breathe the other's breath. Vasya, he said low, think beyond this one battle. The world is safer if the bear is in his clearing, and you must live. You cannot, she cut him off.
I already have, and I swore your brother wouldn't have to go back. We understand each other, he and I. Sometimes it frightens me.
I am not surprised, he said. Spirit of sea and fire that you are, he is the worst parts of your own nature writ large.
His hands were on her shoulders now.
Vasya, he is a danger to you.
Then keep me safe. She raised her eyes to his. Pull me back when he drags me too far down. There is a balance to be struck here too, Morosko, between him and you, between men and Cherti. I was born to be in between. Do you think I don't know it?
His eyes were sad.
Yes, he said.
I know.
He looked up at the bear again, and this time the two brothers were silent, measuring each other. It is your choice and not mine, Vasilisa Petrovna. Vasya heard the bear exhale and realized that he really had been afraid. She let her head fall forward an instant to the wool and fur of Morosko's shoulder, felt his hands slide around her back and hold her there briefly, suspended between day and night, between order and chaos.
Take me somewhere quiet, she wanted to say. I cannot bear the noise and the stink of men anymore. But the time for that was past. She had chosen her course. She lifted her head and stepped back. Morozko reached into his sleeve and drew out something small and shining. I brought this for you, he said. It was a green jewel on a cord, rougher than the formal perfection of the sapphire necklace she'd once worn. She did not touch it, but stared, wary.
Why?
I went far away, said Morozko. That is why I did not come to you, even dreaming, even when you plucked the bear from his prison. I went south, through the snows of my own kingdom. I took the road to the sea. There, I called Chornomor, the sea king, out of the water, who has not been seen for many lives of men.
Why did you go?
Morozko hesitated. I told him what he never knew, that the witch of the wood had borne him children. She stared.
Children? To the king of the sea?
He nodded once. Twins. And I told him that among his grandchildren's children was one I loved. And so the sea king gave this to me, for you. He almost smiled. There is no magic in it now, and no binding. It is a gift. She still didn't reach for the jewel. How long have you known?
Not as long as you think, although I wondered whence your strength. I wondered if it could be only the witch, a mortal woman with magic who'd passed her talent to her daughters. But then I saw Varvara, and I knew it was more than that. Chornomor has fathered sons, now and again, and often they have their father's magic and lives that are longer than the lives of men. So I asked Midnight for the truth, and she told me. You are the Sea King's great-grandchild.
Will I live a long time then?
I do not know. Who could know? For you are witch and chert and woman too. A descendant of Russian princes and Pyotr Vladimirovich's daughter. Chornomor might know. He said he would answer questions, but only if you came to see him.
It was too much to take in, but she took the jewel. It was warm in her hand. She caught a faint whiff of salt. It felt as though he'd handed her a key to herself, but one she could not examine. There was too much else to do. Then I will go to the sea, she said. If I survive the dawn, he said heavily, I will be at the battle. But my task is still the dead, Vasya.
Mine is the living, said the bear, and he smiled. What a pair we are, my twin.
Chapter 34 Lightbringer. Grim day, and all about them the army was stirring. Beyond, far out on the great field of Kulikova, the Tatars were awake. The Russians could hear the Tatars' horses snorting into the chill, but nothing could be seen. The world was obscured in thick mist.
No battle until the fog burns off, said Sasha.
He had no stomach for food, but he drank a little mead, passed the bottle to Vasya. When he woke, he'd found her already awake, sitting alone before his renewed fire, a line between her brows, pale but composed. It was cold, the sky gray above the mist, promising more early snow. Then the sun heaved a cold rim over the edge of the earth, and the mist began to thin. He drew a deep breath.
I must go to Dmitri. He is waiting for a messenger. Whatever happens, I will find you before the fighting begins. In the meantime, go with God, sister. You are to go unseen and run no risks.
No, she said, and smiled reassuringly. My business is with Cherti this day, not with the swords of men.
I love you, Vasochka, he said, and left her.
The messenger had returned, and the Tatars had accepted Dmitri's challenge. They had also brought the name of Mamai's champion. Sasha and Dmitri heard it with the same cold thrill of rage.
"I have dozens of men who would take your place," said Dmitri, "but..."
"Not with this champion," said Sasha. "If he is not to be yours, then he is mine, brother."
Dmitri did not disagree. They stood together in his tent, while attendants ran in and out. All about them was the neighing and the ringing of steel and the shouts of the waking army. The grand prince offered his cousin bread, and Sasha forced a little of it down.
"Besides," Sasha added, keeping the anger from his voice, "another man would take the glory for his own city, for Tver or Vladimir or Suzdal. It must be for Rus and for God, brother, for on this field we are one people."
"One people," said Dmitri thoughtfully. "Did your sister return with her followers?"
"Yes," said Sasha, and gave his cousin a dark look. "She is tempered like steel now, and so very young. And I blame you for pulling her into this."
Dmitri did not look repentant.
"She knows the stakes as well as I," Sasha said. "She says let men beware of the river, and also to trust that the trees will conceal them, and to fear neither storm nor fire."
"I can't decide if that is welcome or ominous," said Dmitri.
"Perhaps both," said Sasha. "Nothing about my sister is simple. Brother, if I..."
Dmitri shook his head sharply.
"Do not say it, but yes, she will be as a sister to me too. She need fear nothing from my hand."
Sasha bowed his head and said not a word.
"Come then," said Dmitri. "I will arm you."
Mail shirt and cuirass, a shield, a leaf-shaped spear, red at the haft, good boots, cuisses for his thighs, a pointed helm. It was soon done. Sasha's fingertips felt cold.
"Where is your armor?" he asked Dmitri.
The grand prince was dressed as a minor boyar, one of hundreds. Dmitri looked cheerful, like a boy caught in mischief. His attendants, the ones Sasha could see, looked simultaneously anxious and exasperated.
"I had one of my boyars change places with me," he said. "Do you think I want to sit on a hill clad in scarlet? No. I will fight properly, and I will not give the Tatar bowmen a better target than I can help."
"Your cause is defeated if you are slain," said Sasha.
"My cause is defeated if I am not the leader of this host," said Dmitri, "for Rus will fracture if I am not lord. They will be as leaves in defeat, scattering in a strong wind, or they will be overproud in victory, each trying to claim a greater share than the others. No, I will play for the great prize. What else is there?"
"What indeed," said Sasha.
"I have served you as well as God, cousin," he said, "and been proud to do it, for all I've done or not done. Forgive me."
"Do we talk of forgiveness, brother?" said Dmitri. "The left hand does not beg forgiveness of the right."
He clapped Sasha on the back. "Go with God." Armed, they went out to where the army waited, drawn up on the field of Kulikova. It was a little before noon by then, and the mist was burning away.
"I must find my sister," said Sasha. "I did not bid her a proper farewell."
"There is not time," said Dmitri.
A man brought his horse, and he swung to the saddle. As the sun broke through the last of the fog, he raised a hand to shade his eyes.
"Look, there is their champion now."
Dmitri was right. The Tatar champion had appeared, and a roar echoed from 100,000 throats. Sasha, his heart beating fast, mounted Tuman. The steady mare only pricked her ears at the noise.
"Tell her farewell, since I cannot," he said.
As Sasha rode out onto the great sloshing field before the two hosts, he thought he saw a flash of gold. Porjar galloping unseen among the host of Rus. Sasha raised his hand to the glimmer. It was all he could do. Go with God, little sister. Vasya mounted Porjar as soon as her brother left to go to the Grand Prince. The bear was snuffing the air, pleased, Vasya thought, at the tension. He turned a teeth-bearing grin to her.
What now, mistress?
Morozko had left her just as dawn touched the sky. There was still something of his presence in the cold mist, the few snowflakes just drifting down in the wind that riffled the pennants of the Russian host. She felt caught again between them. The bear's joy in battle and Morozko's grief at destruction. The bear's presence and the Winter King's absence. Very well. Morozko's work was with the dead. Hers was with the living. But not just now with men. The first one she saw was like a great black bird with the face of a woman. She soared across the battlefield, rippling banners with her wings, and though men could not see her, they looked up, as though they felt her shadow upon themselves and upon the day. The next was the Lieshi, stepping softly to the border of his forest, the scrubby forest that ringed the battlefield. The forest that currently concealed Vladimir Andreevich and his cavalry, waiting for the right moment to charge. Vasya nudged Porjar and the golden mare. Streaming sparks galloped between the ranks of men, the tents, so that Vasya could go have a word with the forest lord.
I will keep the men hidden, said the Lieshi, when Vasya had clasped his twiggy fingers with her bloody ones, and bewilder their enemies. For your promises and the Grand Princess, Vasilisa Petrovna.
So it was all across the battlefield. While Sasha armed and men ate and drew up rank on rank, the Cherti gathered in the thick mist. The Vodyanoi gurgled in his river. His daughters, the Rusalki, waited on the banks. Some Vasya knew by sight, many she didn't. But still they came until the battlefield was teeming, haunted, and she felt the weight of their eyes and their trust. The thick mist had begun to burn away. She was already sweating, despite the chill, with nerves and with exertion, riding Porjar here and there to rally and dispose and encourage her own people in and around Dmitri's. Finally, there came a single long blast from a trumpet, and Vasya let her attention return to the world of men. She looked across the great swampy field. Mist still lay in patches between the Tatars and the Russians, but now the Tatars could be seen. Vasya's heart sank. There were so many. What could a little fear do to a mass of men that great? Their line stretched out as far as she could see. The snorting of their horses was like a rumble far away. Clouds massed in the north, heavy with snow, and the occasional flake tumbled down. Dmitri had his best troops in the van, with Mikhail, the Grand Prince of Tver, on the left flank. Vladimir, the Prince of Serpukhov, was on the right, but concealed in the thick trees. Somewhere behind Mamai's line, Oleg and his boyars were waiting, too, waiting for another signal to fall upon the Tatars from behind. All around the Cherti waited, flickering like candle flames in the corner of her eyes. The bear at her side, surveying them, said, I have lived a long time, but I have never seen such a magic as this, to draw all our people into war as one. There was a hell light of anticipation in his eyes. Vasya made no answer. She only prayed she'd done the right thing. She tried to think what else she could do, but couldn't think of anything. Porjar was restive now, barely rideable. Tension lay thick in the air. Here was no concealing darkness. The mist was gone. There was nothing to hide the fact that 100,000 men were about to start killing each other. The battle would start soon. Where was Sasha? The bear appeared at her side, and gave the field a look of joy.
Mud and screaming, he said. Certi and men fighting together. Oh, it will be glorious.
Do you know where my brother is? Said Vasya. The bear smiled.